Sunday night edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. We are continuing our series previewing the trade deadline. We're going to do the entire Pacific Division today. Joining me as often, Danny LaRue. What's up?
I'm doing well. Excited to talk about some, well, not as much fake trades as much as the situations that present themselves right now.
I actually have a lot of fake trades for the Clippers, which is a bit of a role reversal for us, but we will get to those. The Clippers, I think of them mostly as a buyer, given where they are, but maybe there's an argument that maybe they're not, just that they say, all right, we're just not close enough to San Antonio and Golden State, and so maybe we should retrench for next year. I don't think that they will do that, though.
Agreed. So when I wrote the Chris Paul piece for the Sporting News, one of the pieces of it was the idea that you have to kind of decide what kind of team you want to be. And so one of the presumptions I made was saying, like, if you want to be a championship team, this group isn't good enough. However, there are many other successful tracks that they could be on that the current team they have are perfect for.
Yeah, that's true, right? We always ask this question, and really this is the question that ownership has to decide more than anyone, is what is important to you? Do you want to just be good for a long time? Do you want to just take your shot at a championship and go high risk, and then if you fail, maybe you've lost future assets and you're going to be bad for a while? Do you want to just kind of bide your time and try to build up to where you can be a consistent championship contender for a long time, like Philly, where you're trying to just get as many bites of the apple for a superstar as possible? All of those are really, you know, I mean, ask Kings fans. They'll be ecstatic if the Kings get to the eighth seed this year, you know. So it's not like there's only one way to do things. But I think that if they do not move one of DeAndre, Chris, or Blake, the important thing to remember is, number one, Chris and Blake can be unrestricted in the summer of 2017. And number two, unless they move one of those three guys, they basically will never have cap space as long as they keep resigning. And then you can throw J.J. Redick in there, too. He's also a free agent that year.
Yeah, the only exception to that would be if there was a huge cap jump, and the like, whether that be through 2017 or through the, you know, because that would be theoretically under new CBA, like, let's say the BRI share increased enough that made it. But that's, we can't plan for that right now, and I don't think the Clippers should be either.
Yeah, and so this is getting a little bit ahead of ourselves for this deadline. I think that it is very likely that they stand pat. Blake has been out. They've been playing well. They're the fifth best team in basketball right now. It's rare that a team like that will trade one of its three best players. That's sort of, you know, where you try to hang around and maybe somebody gets hurt. Or, I mean, no one would have thought they would beat San Antonio last year anyway. Maybe they feel like they match up pretty well with the Spurs. And also, this is a team that until this core got here was never any good. And they're finally, the other thing too is that the Lakers are bad. They're finally, you know, kind of have a chance to make some inroads, and trading away one of your best guys might not be that. So, I mean, obviously, what are their weaknesses that they might want to try to address if they just went for something a little smaller?
The biggest one for them is the move that kind of the absence created by Matt Barnes, which is a two-way player, ideally, who can defend both wing positions, but if only one, probably small forward, so they get a 3-and-D type. But of course, if you could get better than that.
Yeah, and Luke Mbamute has actually been doing okay in that role, but once you get him in the playoffs, nobody's going to guard him. I think that he is a guy that works okay in the regular season, and he is a good defensive player, to be sure. It's good to see him resurrect his career a little bit. Or they've got Jamal Crawford as that fifth guy. Lance has really, you know, kind of failed in that role, or if he hasn't succeeded, maybe more accurately, you can argue about how much of a chance he's gotten. So, yeah, that's what they're looking for, but with the assets they have, probably unrealistic that they could get someone who's going to make a real difference for them on the wing unless they move one of those big three.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's really a challenge because there's also this situation that I'll get into a little bit more later, but basically there just aren't great fits for what they're looking for.
Yeah, and they all also are not helped by the fact that they are out a 2017 first rounder from the Jared Dudley trade, which they did to get rid of him. It now belongs to Toronto. after.
Wait, wasn't the 2017 the Doc Rivers move? I think that's what's in my head. Either way.
No, that was the one. That was RJ Hunter.
Oh, you're right.
From this last year. Yeah, to the Celtics.
Got it.
So yeah, no, this is the trade away Jared Dudley, with 2 years and like $4.6 million left on his deal, $4.6 million a year left on his deal. So anyway, the war chest not exactly full for them in terms of assets. The only young guy that you could look at that might possibly be worth something is C.J. Wilcox. They obviously have not thought enough of him to play him, which is disappointing since he was 23 when he was drafted. He is shooting 42% on threes in his short D-League career, which is about 120 attempts or so, and I thought he looked okay when I saw him at the D-League showcase, but certainly not someone who's going to really get you much in the way of a real player being so unproven as he is.
Yeah, so I'm was surprised and pleased that you were the one who came up with some fake stuff. Do you want to go there now, or do you want to talk about something else first?
Well, I mean, is there anyone that just, you know, more on the small potatoes level that comes to mind as someone that they could target? I mean, they already did a deal of the type that I thought they might, since they're in the tax. They just moved Josh Smith, sent some cash along with him to Houston. Smith was not playing, was a bit of a malcontent. It'll be funny if he comes back and they play each other
four
in the playoffs
five.
And he's playing
it's
against
gonna happen.
Them. That would be very, very amusing. But yeah, but they saved about $3 million there minus the cash that they sent. So it makes sense that they did that. I might have, and there's no one else who really was going to take Josh Smith other than Houston anyway. And if they had just released him, probably unlikely that he gets claimed and then you don't save the money. But it will be interesting if, to save a couple $1 million, he ends up actually playing okay against them in the playoffs.
Okay, so it seems like you're actually setting up my thing, so I'll go first. And so the idea,
yeah.
This is actually a piece that I was going to write, and if you like it enough, I might actually write it now. It was going to be called the Clipper Trap, and the reason for it is that the Clippers will not really have cap space this coming summer. You know, the raise is going to be gobbled up by all the money that they already owe everybody. So
right.
They have two different guys that are in a position where, excluding the present value, because they're, well, one of them is a guy who actually plays, that beyond that they should consider moving. And the first guy, the most obvious one, is Lance Stephenson, because Lance has a team option for next year, which means that you can't move him like in that draft time, and like you're basically, if you don't move him now, you're stuck with clearing his money, which is nice that you don't have anything. So what that means is, since they're not going to have cap space next year, and considering he's not providing present value as much, you want to move him for something that, for a guy who's under contract at least for next year. But the problem is, there just aren't that many players who fit that bill where teams are going to be falling all over themselves to do it. So you kind of have two groups. You have guys who the team that you're trading with might want to just unload them because they're not that good. And then you have guys where it's, you know, maybe it's a little bit more complicated. And so I'm going to rattle off a big list. But the idea is that it's not going to be – and so the other guy, I'll mention him too right here, is Jamal Crawford, who's more complicated because they do have his bird rights, but he's unrestricted. So if he wants to go somewhere else, maybe play their different role, whatever, they can't do anything to stop him. But the list of targets
– Well, yeah, so why don't we do it this way? You give me the list and I'll like and maybe a sentence or two on it, and I'll just react to each guy.
Okay, so the big crazy one is Kenneth Faried. I don't think Denver is going to basically give him up for nothing, but if they did, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. Still not a guy who fits amazingly well with Blake Griffin, but another talented guy that you can maybe take a chance on. And – I don't think he fits well with either DJ or Blake Griffin, frankly, but he is just more talent, and that sort of has been Doc Rivers' idea, is to get more talent on the team and hope that they can figure it out, which they haven't really yet. But not completely unrealistic, but I don't think Denver sees him as just a bad contract. I mean, now if you get to where, all right, we're going to throw in a first-round pick with Lance Stephens' expiring contract, then maybe, you know, I think Denver might think about that.
Yeah, especially considering how well Jokic has played. I think that he's another guy. Like, basically, they've added more to their front court than I think they expected. Next guy is...
Yeah, and they like Gallo, I think, playing the four a lot, too.
Next guy is a 3-and-D, interesting, Corey Brewer.
Other than the fact that he doesn't do any 3 and not really much D other than getting in the passing lanes for steals, I mean, he's a really bad contract. That would be a heist for Houston if they were able to...
Yeah.
to do that deal.
Similar boat, Jose Calderon, but the Knicks actually need him.
Yeah, and also just I don't see how much he really helps the Clippers.
Yeah, he's just a dude, basically. Rodney Stuckey.
That helps a little bit more. I mean, it basically is kind of Lance Stephenson without the fancy passing, maybe not as good of a defender, a little bit more efficient.
But, I like him better with the second unit.
Yeah, also goes for another. Again, I mean, I think guy, unless it's a guy who can at least be really good at defense, because they have plenty of shot creation, you know, like that's not something that they are missing. They need someone who can shoot the ball on the second unit or who can defend chiefly on the perimeter.
Right. And so the next guy, I actually have a kind of a bigger thought on him. But so Kevin Martin has a player option for next year. And I think Kevin Martin represents like the, if everything else fails, a trade that both sides should make, because the reasoning is that Lance Stephenson, yeah, he doesn't really add anything to the Wolves, and then it doesn't make a difference to them, so it clears money for them. And for the Clippers, he's probably, you know, like, if you can't get anything better for Lance Stephenson, Martin is probably a guy who fits in their rotation. And, you know, if he opts in, that's great. Like, it's no downside for the Clippers, really, and no downside for the Wolves.
Yeah, just potential luxury tax payment next year, depending on kind of how everything else shakes out for them. Maybe the Wolves would try to extract like a second rounder to make that fair. I mean, if you think that Martin has some value and that he's not going to opt out, I mean, a lot of that is just based on whether you think he's going to opt in or opt out. I mean, I think being out of the rotation with the cap jumping, he might decide to opt out and see if he can get one last contract. So then maybe that that does make that a little bit unequal in favor of the Clippers, because if Kevin Martin isn't expiring, he has more value than Lance Stephenson does right now.
Yeah. Alexi Ajinsa, I don't think New Orleans would give him up for kind of the equivalent of nothing, but it would be interesting.
they might. They might. That one's somewhat interesting, and Lance might even play in New Orleans, especially with Eric Gordon out for this time period. Okay,
Carl Landry.
Well, but Landry, then you got to pay him. He's got 6.5 next year. I think that's that would be unfavorable for the Clippers. Landry is probably a worse asset than Lance is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The logic would basically be that it's better to have him than nothing. Like, you know, even if it's luxury tax payment, it's not. They're also, like, from what I remember with their numbers, I could look it up. They're not going to be hit too hard in the tax. It's just that they won't have cap flexibility. So if it's, you know, if it's just basically paying Landry $6.5 million versus nothing, I would definitely rather have Carl Landry.
Also, one thing to remember, they are out potentially their 2016 second rounder, which is top 55 protected to the Cavs. They can also swap second rounders with the Nets if they don't have to give it up to the Cavs, but they probably will be in the top five best records. It looks like they're kind of on pace for that, so they'll probably lose that second rounder, which actually would hurt, because if they lose it, then they could swap with the Nets. They actually, you're losing probably like the 35th pick, 33rd pick, if you don't finish in the top five worst records, or top five best records, that is. Yeah.
The end ones.
And then they're out, they're out 2017 and 2018, yeah, as well. So not a ton of second rounders.
Spent long enough in this, so I'm just going to rattle off the last guys and then we can just do it.
Yeah, don't worry. Not every team is going to take this long.
Markieff Morris, Devin Harris, Derek Williams, Nick Young, and my personal favorite, Spencer Hawes.
Markieff might be one if they were willing to, but again, he's going to be a bench guy, kind of redundant with Blake. Cole Aldrich is playing well as their backup center, and Markieff goes on for a long time. That's risky. I mean, I guess he's kind of insurance if Blake leaves after 2017, but I think they still, if they threw in a first rounder, Phoenix would probably bite on that. It's just a question of whether you want to or not. And the first rounder they can trade away is 2019, obviously.
Anything else? Anything else there that stood out? Also, I believe.
That was the only one I thought was worth talking about, was Markieff out of those.
Yeah. Also, I'm pretty sure that the Clippers cannot reacquire Spencer Hawes. I just thought it was funny. And it is funny.
Okay. I was thinking, though, that of the guy to trade, if you're the Clippers, is DeAndre Jordan. And my thinking is that although he is under contract longer than those other two guys are, finding a facsimile of what he does is easier, but he still kind of has more value, especially since he's under contract longer that maybe the structure of a potential deal could be getting a kind of rim protector or center back who wouldn't be as good as him, obviously, and then also a 3-and-D guy. So I have a bunch of potential fake trades I would like to get your quick thoughts on. Let's see here. Toronto for Jonas Valanciunas and Damari Carroll. And this also might include throwing in Stevenson's expiring contract. These don't work all specifically under the cap, but
it's just
they have
conceptual.
Enough expiring money that they could make it work.
I don't think Toronto would do it. I think they're giving up way more talent in the deal.
I don't know. Damari Carroll has been injured. That deal was always going to be bad on the back end for him. So he's now injured. Who knows how much he's going to help this year when he comes back from that surgery. You've now lost the best year of that deal, theoretically. Maybe next year is the last year that you would think he could be worth that money. And then you've got kind of two bad years. And Valanciunas, certainly, he's improved a little bit offensively, but they already have so much shot creation on that team with DeMar and Kyle Lowry, and they don't have a guy who really can protect the rim and run a ton of pick and roll. I mean, Lowry and DeRozan are both great pick and roll guys. I think I would very seriously consider that if I were Toronto. I think Toronto would actually be getting the better of that deal because I think Carroll is just a question mark health-wise, and then he's got two bad years on the end of that contract.
And he's older than people think because he floated around for a while.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, do you think that's at all realistic? Or not?
I think it's realistic in terms of value. I just don't think the teams would consider it. But that's, of course, a separate question.
Yeah, and I think the Clippers... Part of the problem with this, with trading DJ, is he's their best defensive player, probably. Well, Paul is probably the best relative to his position, but because he's a center, DJ is probably the best.
Come on, he was the defensive player of the year last year, Nate.
Thanks, Doc. He's still pretty good, and he's been better this year. The advanced metrics like him more this year. But I think if you're trying to get better defensively, trading that guy away, I mean, maybe what you do is you get more just a defense only guy and then hope to get the 3-and-D guy as well. I mean, maybe you ask him to throw in like Biombo or something too.
One thing,
DJ plays a million minutes. You don't need Biombo anymore.
One thing I'll say about that also is that I think both those teams would become really interesting if that trade happened. Like you just think about how it would change both the geometry of the floor and what they do really well. Like a Lowry DeAndre pick and roll would just be awesome.
Washington for Marcin Gortat, Jared Dudley, and Otto Porter.
If I'm Washington, I definitely do that. I think that helps them.
Absolutely.
In terms of the Clippers,
you've got no wings then this year though if you're Washington. But this is really we're going to set up for 2016 free agency, whether it's KD or somebody else. I mean, if you've got John Wall, Beal, and DeAndre.
And still have that space.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason you do this for Gortat instead of Ney, is you get rid of enough. They would probably lose about $5 million in space, but I think they would still have enough for a max contract if they did that.
I think they would.
Indiana. So you do that if you're Washington. You don't do that if I think pretty clearly you wouldn't do.
Yeah,
that
it's so short term, especially because Jared Dudley is a free agent after this year, and let's just say that it's unlikely he re-signs with the Clippers.
Indiana for CJ Miles, Miles Turner, and Jan Mahinmi, and maybe you would get Monte so the Pacers can dump his salary, and you throw in Lance as well to give the Pacers a little more value. What do you think of that?
You know how much I love Miles Turner. I wouldn't do it.
Would not do it.
Yeah, because you have 8 years of team control with Turner, and he's on a way more value, like a way better contract for basically that entire time. DeAndre is a great player, but they're also not peaking right now. You know, this isn't the Pacers. Pacers aren't at the position yet where they're ready to be pushed over the top. So you're not getting the surplus value from DeAndre. Let's say this year and next year. You're a fun, interesting team, but you're also trading away, CJ Miles is a nice piece for them. Like, they wouldn't have a way to replace him functionally.
Yeah, that might be true. And he's on a real good contract, but it's been a bit of a shooting slump lately. But again, this is another one where you're going to have space in 2016 summer. And so maybe it's like, all right, Paul George, DeAndre Jordan, those are some big names. Maybe we can get another really good guy.
But that Clippers team would be awesome.
Well, yeah, so that's the question. Right now, would you make that trade if you're the Clippers? Do you think that makes you better this year? I think you do to get the Turner asset, but would you make that trade just for this year? Do you think it makes you better?
Yes. I think the margin between Mahinmi and Jordan is substantial, but not that huge, and Miles over all the other kind of...
Yeah, Miles is not like some good defender, though.
Yeah, but
like,
think about who's been in that spot. I mean, he's the closest... Yeah. His value to that team, and he's a guy who fits with the first and second unit. He can play both kind of swingman positions. I think it's not a clear win, but I would say that it would make the Clippers better, excluding the other huge advantage with DeAndre is just the durability thing, that he's going to be out there, and of course we've been dealing with issues with Mahinmi and with Miles Turner.
Charlotte for Nicola Batum and Al Jefferson.
Way too big a risk for the Clippers, because both those guys are free agents.
I agree. You would have to be damn well sure that Nick Batum were re-signing, and Al, doesn't really fit in with what they're trying to do. He's a terrible fit next to Blake Griffin and can't defend anybody. That would be more of a salary thing. I mean, maybe you could say, all right, we want Cody Zeller or Kaminsky. I mean, Kaminsky would be an excellent fit as a center next to Blake on offense. Your defense is probably going to be garbage if you've got him at center next to Blake. But
what if it was Zeller? Like, what if Zeller?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thought. I mean, if you make the assumption that Batum were to re-sign, now you got to pay him $25 million a year, too, to get him to re-sign. That's another problem. But we're going to be capped out anyway, so maybe it doesn't matter as much, and he's young enough that probably doesn't end up being an awful contract. I mean, I love that for Charlotte, obviously. Boston for Kelly Olynyk, Jay Crowder, and Tyler Zeller.
This is, I think, the most interesting, because Crowder does a lot of the things that you would want in a three, and Olynyk, while I wouldn't want to play Olynyk and Blake Griffin together, he can do a lot of other, he can fill a role on this team. He's just a good player. And if I'm Boston, I would do that with the simple logic that it's going to be a lot harder to find another DeAndre Jordan than it is to find another Jay Crowder, because they haven't found another DeAndre Jordan in years.
Well, that's interesting.
And I know your opinion on wings.
You foreshadowed exactly where I was going. I think there is a very good argument that Jay Crowder on his contract, which is $7 million a year for 4 more years after this one, compared to DeAndre, who's only 2 more years after this one at $20 million a year, Jay Crowder just by himself might be a better asset than DeAndre Jordan is. And now Kelly Olynyk, you're going to throw him in. Zeller, not really worth much to them as a restricted free agent, probably not going to re-sign him. They could even end up just revoking his qualifying offer in the offseason. I mean, maybe you could say Jay and Tyler Zeller might be more fair than Olynyk. And Olynyk and DeAndre would be an amazing fit together offensively, and you've still got Amir Johnson, too. That'd be a pretty sweet three-man big rotation, and then but then the problem for Boston is now you have no wings. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, it's just value over replacement position. Getting a guy like Crowder, a quality starter, I mean, he's been talked about as maybe even an all-star this year, which, a lot of that's just due to the East being bad, but especially in the East, there's so few 3-and-D wings. I don't know. I'm not sure I would do that if I were Boston, especially because they have some pretty good flexibility this summer as well. But it's very interesting to think about.
Yeah, what changes it a little bit for me also is the Nets pick, because that's top five. And while you're not going to get a guy who's going to be, a contributor to, let's say, a title team right away, to me, you could set yourself up really nicely for 2017, 2018, which would be pretty awesome if you're Boston.
To the Atlanta Hawks for Al Horford and Kent Bazemore or Thabo Sefolosha. And Horford will be a free agent this summer. That's your and the Hawks desperately need rebounding and rim protection. And the Clippers with Al Horford at center would be just an unbelievable offensive team. And Al is pretty good moving his feet. He would probably matches up a little bit better against the Warriors maybe than DeAndre does, just because he's a little bit more mobile.
This is,
and then Kent Bazemore could solve your kind of 3-and-D or Thabo as well. And I think the Hawks just think that they can find someone else like that.
This is my favorite one because it kind of feeds into a logical paranoia for both teams. So with the Hawks, what you're doing is risk mitigation. You know, you're saying, well, if Al Horford left, we'd be screwed because we'd be left with nothing. So we get a guy who's pretty close to as good as him. And yeah, you losing whether it's Bazemore or Tabo, but that's your fifth starter. I mean, as much as we really like Kent Bazemore, you're doing that. Basically, you're paying that as a form of risk mitigation. Also, DeAndre is probably on a better contract relative to his skill level right now than what you're going to have to give Al Horford. So that's really, it's really fascinating for me. And then for the Clippers, if you think you can get him back, I'd say you're definitely better this year and probably better moving forward, just depending. The problem with them with Bazemore, why I'd probably lean Tabo just in the logic of it, is that he's the early bird issue. And so, you know, with all the stuff related to that and re-signing him, but it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, and the Hawks might move Bazemore because they figure we're just not going to be able to re-sign this guy anyway. And I like it a little bit for the Hawks because DeAndre next to Paul Millsap is a fantastic fit. You kind of push your timeline back just a little bit so that you're because DeAndre is a little bit younger than Al is. But, yeah, that's an interesting one. All right, I hope you enjoyed that trip down the rabbit hole. Take a second to talk to you about a sponsor, and then we'll be back with some more teams. I want to inform you guys, big news, Danny and I are huge nerds. You may actually have realized that already because we talk about exceedingly nerdy subjects on this show, and we're both cat dorks. But as huge nerds, we both enjoy Loot Crate, which is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that includes licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. They guarantee it's at least $45 worth of gear, and it's stuff you can't get anywhere else because they work directly with these merchandising companies to fix it so you're getting a unique value. Loot Crate is like a friend that knows what you love and surprises you with an awesome present every month. Also, for our international listeners, they ship to 27 countries. I know we've had some people talk to us saying, hey, we'd love to support the show, but international, none of your sponsors ship there. This is your chance to support the show. If you live internationally, they ship to 27 countries, so you can check that out on the site. If you now go onto their site and use the code CAPSPACE, you can get $3 off that monthly charge and also let them know that you came from us. They are a new sponsor. We would love for them to continue sponsoring the show, and a great way to do that is to go and get yourself some awesome gear every month from Loot Crate using that cap space code. Golden State, we will be spending far less time on.
Yep.
They are in the tax, so you could see them making just a small money-cutting move. Jason Thompson has pretty well proven that he is not really someone who's going to be contributing at all for this team. He makes about $6.8 million this year, and then he has $2.65 million guaranteed next year. The only problem is that the Warriors are encumbered. They can't trade a first-round pick until 2019 because they traded away their 2017 in the Andre Iguodala deal, and then also 2016 through 18 second-rounders as well are encumbered due to that same deal. So 2019 second-rounder, 2019 first-rounder are the first picks that they can trade away, and if they're going to dump him to say Portland, which Portland's going to want to do because they want to get up to the salary floor and save like actual money, because otherwise that money gets distributed to all of their players at the end of the year, and if you get Thompson and get up to the salary floor or closer to it, then you're only basically playing a third of that cap number instead of the entire thing. Anyway, that's an aside. But that's basically about all I see, because I don't really see what this team needs, and they're not going to want to mess with chemistry at all either.
Exactly, and they have two interesting trade exceptions acquired during their minutiae over the summer, but it's unlikely that they're going to use them now because they already have all their roster spots locked up. So those are something maybe, depending on what they do next summer, that they might use then. And I think they're happy with everyone on their roster. This isn't really a team that has flotsam unless you dealt with like a Jason Thompson deal, so I wouldn't expect them to use either of those.
Yeah, and even Spates, they'll probably keep around. They probably feel like they need him a little bit in case there's an injury at center. I mean, maybe you could say they could use a slightly better backup to than Barbosa, or a stretch four if like one of their wings were going to get hurt to come off the bench. But, you know, I don't see them taking on money, and they don't have a ton of assets. So I would be shocked if they did anything of note. And even dumping Thompson, they probably don't have enough assets to do that either.
Yeah.
Phoenix Suns, I think that they are very clearly sellers now, especially because they will want to improve their draft position as much as possible. But let's go through first their space for 2016. They should have about $17 million. Included in that is about $5 million in cap holds for draft picks, and that includes Bogdan Bogdanovic, who was drafted in 2014, could come over. They could dump maybe about $7 million in salary if they were to move on from Sonny Weems, which they will almost certainly. He's $2.9 million non-guaranteed, and then Tucker is $5.3 million. They'll probably keep him, I would imagine, although he's only $1.5 guaranteed. So you're looking at around $20 million in space for them. But they're going to be so bad, it's hard to imagine them being a major player for a major free agent. I think more likely they might try to get off of some salary, whether it's Markieff or Tyson Chandler.
Yeah, and so about a year ago, I might have been 2 years ago, I kind of coined the term of the Nene test, and that was in reference back to when Masai Ujiri signed Nene and basically traded him shortly thereafter as an asset. And the big question here for me with that is Tyson Chandler. And so Tyson Chandler so if you don't count this season at all, he has 3 years and $39 million left on his contract. He's 33 right now. He'll turn 34 before the start of next season. So with the cap expanding, if you were a team, let's say you were a team with some cap space, but you weren't really in the max game, and you had a need at center, not for this year, would you want him?
Oh, you know, he's looked a little bit more spry lately, and I think a big part of it too, which was very underreported, was the hamstring injury that he had. It, you know, it tied the franchise record with 27 rebounds the other night against the Hawks, who didn't have Millsap, and so probably threw out one of the worst rebounding lineups that you will ever see on an NBA court in that game. But nonetheless, he's looked more spry of late. You do wonder about whether he can continue to contribute at a starter level beyond this year, and throughout most of the year he hasn't been, so it's hard to know whether that was the hamstring or just getting old. I mean, I think he's probably, you know, if a good backup center, good leader in the locker room, theoretically, although he hasn't shown that as much this year, would be making $7 or $8 million. So he's probably overpaid by about like $5 million for what he is a year going forward after this year.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And also you have the issue that he doesn't have a ton of upside. I mean, you're thinking about, he's not a guy who's really going to outperform his expectations unless the health comes into play. So you're not betting on him the way that, let's say, Portland bet on Al-Farouq Aminu or Ed Davis. Like, it's a little bit different in that way.
They do have a lot of assets as well in terms of draft picks, and this is, they kind of have the same problem as the Celtics, where they've got this 2018 Miami pick that's 1-7 protected, then it's unprotected in 2019. They also have the 2021 Miami pick unprotected as well, and then they've got this pick coming from Cleveland this year, from the Isaiah Thomas trade, that will certainly convey, that's only top 10 protected. That'll probably be, you know, in the late 20s. They've got Bogdanovic still, who they can bring over. They've got too many young guys already. So you might see a consolidation type of trade in their future, but it's hard to see what that's going to be at this point, especially with so much uncertainty coming up this year. I wouldn't expect a major move from them other than Markieff. And I think at this point, they're kind of probably holding out to get like a first rounder for him. Do you think that that is realistic?
No, I don't. I mean, because what's been so concerning is that like his play on the floor has suffered so much this year. And so you have to be sitting there going, you're now, if you're a team, you're questioning whether he will turn it around with you. Whereas before, if they, let's say they traded him at the very beginning of the season, teams would have been more optimistic.
Yeah, maybe if you were, say, Detroit, but, you know, obviously to pair him back with Marcus again. If you were a team that is sort of, you know, playoff fringe, maybe what I would do is say, and this is actually, you know, there's an executive talking to me, and I wrote about this in my CBA piece at the showcase, that basketball really needs conditional trades where you can say, and based mostly on team success more than player success, so it can't be manipulated, but where you'd say, all right, if we're on the fringe of the playoffs, we're going to trade for him. If we make the playoffs this year, we trade you our first rounder. Otherwise, it turns into a second rounder, you know, something like that. But in lieu of that, maybe if you're one of these teams that's kind of on the playoff cusp right now, you can say, all right, we will trade you our first round pick, top 20 protected, for like 3 years or something. And that's how you get to where, because you know if you're conveying that pick now, that probably means that Markieff actually was pretty good. And then if he wasn't, you know, whatever, you didn't pay anything for him. But, I mean, at $7.5 million, the way he's played this year, he's obviously not worth it, but he has enough of a history and has been pouting enough this year that there's a very good reason to think that he will be better. So maybe that's the type of trade that ultimately could get him moved.
Yeah, the only other thing I'll mention with that is having that kind of protection for a long time leads to Stepien considerations, just because that it just encumbers you a little bit more than you'd probably be comfortable with. So it's possible. I definitely think there's an idea behind it. The team that I thought of for Markieff, beyond the Pistons for obvious reasons, is I think Indiana would just be a nice fit in terms of what they need at the power forward position. And they, you know, their cap space isn't as valuable as a lot of other teams just because they don't pull free agents very often. But I don't know if they have the right combination of things to move for them.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, they do kind of need to move on from him at this point. It seems like it's just not going to work. Maybe the hope is at this point, if you're them, just hold on to him. We'll probably, it seems very unlikely that Hornacek would return since they haven't given him a new contract and this has been an awful year. And he supposedly was given time to turn it around after they fired his assistants. But in the meantime, it probably doesn't look like that's going to happen. So you have to imagine he'll be gone. Maybe the thinking is we'll get a new coach in who can try to reach him. And then, you know, he's worth nothing right now, so why trade him? Now, you might as well just try to rehabilitate his value, and it's not like this is a team that's going to be using that $7 million in space with where they are in the success cycle anyway.
Well, and they can, when teams are spending like crazy next summer, Markieff's contract will look a lot better. So maybe you'll just even find a team at that point that'll say, well, you know, we'd rather have Markieff for 3 years, and I don't know exactly what the number is, but let's say it's 24. We'd rather have him for 324 or 320 than this other guy who wants $60 million.
All right, before we move on to the Kings, let's get another word from our sponsors. Sacramento Kings, they have very few assets to move. I think if they had not, they might like to be buyers. This is another bad consequence, basically, of that Philly trade, where if they had just stretched those guys instead, then they actually could have moved some future picks to try and get better. I mean, they still could use desperately a 3-and-D guy on the wing. As you saw, like Omri Caspi trying to guard Paul George the other night against the Pacers, although they won because of that 48 points from DeMarcus Cousins, that didn't look very good. You know, Rudy Gay is not a stopper on the wing. Ben McLemore is maybe their best hope there, but he's too limited offensively, and Carl doesn't trust him. So they really need another 3-and-D guy as well. Everybody does, of course, but now they really can't trade anything because their first pick that they can trade that's a first rounder is 2021 right now.
Yeah, because they have the existing obligation to the Bulls from the Luol Deng trade, and then they have the existing obligation.
Yeah, well, no, get it right. The J.J. Hickson trade.
Well, the J.J. Hickson
for
trade.
For them,
the
if we're talking about
Hickson,
it
yeah,
in
for
their
terms. J.J. Hickson, yeah. And then it was in the Luol Deng trade. And then
Because I don't want everyone to forget how bad of a trade that was to get trade Omri Caspi and a first rounder for J.J. Hickson.
Yes.
But anyway, please continue.
Anyway, so they have that, and then they have the obligation of the Sixers, which I wrote about for the Sporting News. And so they have those two trades out there. And the other part that makes it really...
Yeah, and let's reiterate what that is real quick. That is a top 10 protected 2018 first rounder that then becomes unprotected in 2019. So since you can't trade picks 2 years in a row, that means that the first pick that they could trade, it would have to be written as 2 years after the Philly pick is conveyed. And that would either be, you know, so that would be 2020 if it goes in 2018, or 2021 if it goes in 2019.
Right. And also the Kings have no cap space for this year, and they have their cap space for next year is incredibly complicated because they have, let's say, $20 million, but half of that is tied up in Rajon Rondo's cap hold. So if they want to bring him back, you know, $9 million isn't going to do a whole heck of a lot for you next year.
Yeah, that's probably right. And Rondo, you'd have to imagine, I mean, the most that they can pay him is about $11 million to start. Maybe that gets it done if they give him enough years, but with the way he's played, maybe not this year. Then maybe you have to use cap space to start him at like $15 million, and then you're basically kind of out of cap space if you're them again. So without really any assets, could they try to move something, you think? I mean, that doesn't really seem like something that they would do. I mean, Caron Butler, they're sort of trying to trade, but that's just, you know, doing him a favor. I don't know. I mean, what about Costa Kufos?
I think that Kufos has a nice value for this team. His contract is going to look reasonable in a year or two. And if they want to play Cousins and Cauley-Stein together, then you actually do need a third center, because then you're kind of playing one of them as a non-center. And I don't think that teams are going to be falling all over themselves to get Costa Kufos. So, you know, if somebody makes you a crazy offer, then of course you listen. And also at the same on the same line,
yeah, Kufos making $8 million a year, by the way, for three more years after.
Correct.
That.
And I believe it's a player option on the last year. And on the kind of on the other side of the duplicate, Bellinelli and McLemore, to me, they're both useful players. They're both, you know, rotation level, fringy, you know, like probably not starters, but, you know, like guys deserving of minutes. If they wanted to move one of those guys or Collison, they could, but I don't think that they're going to get this great value for any of those guys, even though they are assigned beyond this year.
And Collison is insurance in case Rondo leaves after this year. While he's a decent stopgap, making only $5 million as well. So, yeah, I don't see them doing a ton. If they had the assets, I could absolutely see them trying to do it. But, you know, if they can only trade one more first-round pick, and also I'm not sure who is necessarily out there that's going to move the needle for them as a better wing than Bellinelli or Rudy Gay or Caspi. I mean, those two guys, I don't see anyone else being available who's going to be start over one of those two guys.
Yeah, and also remember that if they hadn't made the Sixers trade, they would also have Stauskas, who would be a nice little sweetener.
Well, probably not, because if he played the same way as he's playing with the Sixers, he probably actually would be pretty worthless.
Fair point.
All right, let's get to the Lakers. They are slated to have about, I mean, I think they're pure sellers, obviously, at this point. They got to retain that top three protected pick. They also don't want to take on any money past this year because they can have about $60 million or so in space. They also owe first-round picks already to Philly from the Steve Nash trade via Phoenix, and then Orlando from the Dwight trade over these next this year and then going to 2018 if it's Orlando. So they are sellers. What do they have to sell?
Not very much. I'll rattle off the players without really talking about their value in terms of it. So Roy Hibbert is the first one.
Okay.
I don't think
he's making about $15 million.
I don't think anybody wants him.
Expiring contract.
Yeah. So, you know, if this were 3 years ago, that might have been nice. Now, not super interesting.
Okay. Who else we got?
Brandon Bass. I think Brandon Bass, he signed for this year for, I think it's about $3 million, and then he has a player option for next year. I don't think there's a chance you can get a first for him, but I think somebody could give up a second.
Yeah, and I think he's been back in the rotation, playing okay, has a track record of being a rotation big on a decent team. You know, he's not someone who communicates incredibly well defensively, and that is something that obviously hurts on this team. But if he's in a more stable defensive ecosystem, he can be more effective, especially if you're trying to switch. And then Lou Williams under contract for 2 years after this one at $7 million per year or so. And then maybe you've got Ryan Kelly, who is going to be a restricted free agent after this year.
And Lou Williams, my instinct is that you can actually get something better for him after this season, because he's not the kind of guy who just fills a need for somebody. And also because right now, they would have, with almost every team in the league, they would have to match salary at least somewhat. And so that cuts into the value, because most teams don't really have a guy that is useless to them. So, you know, in terms of negative value, but in the summer, there are going to be lots of teams with money. And so if somebody's sitting there, kind of the same logic that we used earlier of, like, you know, that he'll look better in comparison. So I would probably hold on to him unless somebody came across with something. He's not going to help them win so many games that it's like, oh my God, we have to move him to keep our pick.
Just thinking out loud here, what are some teams that could use Lou Williams? The Celtics are the first one that comes to mind for me, a good defensive team that just desperately needs someone to create a shot when Isaiah Thomas is out of the game. Now, you can't play those two guys together because you'll just get slaughtered defensively. But, I mean, or you couldn't for more than maybe like 5-10 minutes a game or so. But that's something that might be useful. I mean, maybe you could say Tyler Zeller, whose cap hold would only be about $5.6 million, maybe, and the Lakers could use a backup center. Tyler Zeller could even start for them next year if they re-sign him, although, you know, you're going to have to pay him next summer. So that doesn't get you a ton, and you could always just, at least you have his restricted match rights, which you, if you were trying to sign him with cap space, you wouldn't have. You know, and Lou is probably worth a little bit more than Tyler Zeller on an expiring contract as well. But that is the first team that comes to mind for me that just could desperately use that shot creation and that BS free throw drawing that Lou Williams provides.
If Portland wanted to make a playoff push, that would work too. He'd be, that's another one.
Yeah, again, another, you can't play him really. I mean, I guess if you're going to play him next to, if you're going to play CJ and Dame together already, then when one of them goes out of the game, you could put in Lou Williams too. It's pretty, basically the same thing. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, there's not really a ton of other teams.
Memphis, but they don't have a matching salary.
What about Jeff Green?
Oh, that would be fun.
I mean, I guess they're using him, but and Memphis would have to throw something in. They are out draft picks going forward, a first rounder. I mean, well, let me ask you this. Do you think Lou Williams is worth a first rounder on that contract? I think it's a good contract.
I think it's a good contract. If for whatever reason you were sure it was a really deep first rounder, then yeah, you know, I could see giving up like 27 through 30 on him, but higher than that, I would be dicey even in this class. Especially a 2016 one, because the rookie scale with this year is going to be so valuable to have.
I mean, the Celtics have so many picks too. I mean, what if they traded like Terry Rozier for Lou Williams and some flotsam, you know, Terry Rozier and Tyler Zeller or something like that.
I think that would be nice. That would give them a lot of backcourt players, but a lot of interesting backcourt players.
But yeah, I mean, just the fact that he and Isaiah are so similar makes you think that maybe that's not like the absolute best idea. But Lou, and you know, Lou is still on a good contract. He could still be a bench scorer for a Lakers team that thinks they're going to sign somebody. So maybe they think we're just going to keep him and we'll bring him off the bench, behind Russell and Clarkson. But I mean, he's very much redundant with those guys who don't really defend very much and are also kind of combo guardy type of guys as well. So, I mean, I think you have enough of those type of players with Lou. If you can get a player at another position that's a kind of similar value to him, that might be helpful. Hibbert's the only one I was able to come up with for him that I don't think the Bulls would want to do is Joakim Noah and a second rounder. And my thought there is that Noah's out for the year. He can match salary and, you know, getting someone who's in for the year and, you know, could be a backup center, provide some toughness, box out some rim protection against the Cavs, especially when they're going with Mozgov and Tristan Thompson as a backup center, might be helpful. But, you know, I don't see the Bulls trading Noah. I think they just would value his bird rights over getting Roy Hibbert's going to give you for the rest of this year.
That would be such a spectacularly tanktastic move for the Lakers, though, to trade for a guy who's just not playing.
Yeah, well, they should try to get whatever they can for Hibbert.
Oh, absolutely. Although, I'm not saying they should do it, but they should. But Chicago, like in terms of the optics, like people who whine about the Sixers, like that would be an even more kind of magnificent version of that. Except that I guess they could sign him with, well, they wouldn't even need bird rights because they're going to have so much cap space.
Well, yeah, that's true. They probably, there's almost no circumstance in which they operate over the cap.
I think it's actually mathematically impossible.
Well, if Kobe came back, that would probably be the only way. If Kobe came back and they had his cap hold and they had Roy Hibbert's cap hold, then they might be able to get there. But, you know, don't see that happening. All right, now that we've really reached pure speculation, let's call this one quits for today. Anything to plug before we go?
Warriors Weekly and League Pass Alert will be out tomorrow.
Oh, wait, hold on. We got to preview Spurs Warriors.
Hey, there we go.
All right, we're not going to delete that, though.
No.
Tim Duncan is out for San Antonio with a sore right knee. Who knows whether that is gamesmanship from Pop or not. I kind of tend to think it is a little bit, but as we've said before, the idea of whether Duncan can stay on the floor against those Warriors small units is going to be very interesting to see for me. I don't know whether Pop thinks that. I do think they're going to miss Duncan a little bit on offense because he set such awesome screens. He actually really, in that game that the Warriors lost at home to the Spurs early last year, he really bedeviled Curry and Parker, really killed them because Duncan was just killing whoever the ball handler was on pick and rolls. But, I don't know that I'd say Duncan is probably less important versus the Warriors than basically any other team in the league.
What I'm excited to see is who they start at center. To see whether they go,
It'll be David West, I think. Or whether it be
Diop.
I think it'll be David
West.
It's
not going
to
be Boban as much as everybody wants it to be. It will not be. But
yeah, and I think Boban works great against that Warriors second unit that can't score at all, when Clay and Steph are both out of the game, and they always have at least one traditional center in there. So I think Boban would be totally fine against that unit. It'll be interesting to see. I'll be looking forward to seeing my first Boban experience since 2014 Summer League.
And what I'm kind of excited about with this game is I don't think either team's going to really show much. I think it's just the nature of both of these coaches. But even a vanilla Spurs-Warriors game will be some of the best basketball you'll see all year.
Yeah, that's true. And it's less of a measuring stick than it might have been. You have to imagine also that Pop is going to kind of go as vanilla as possible in this game. We were not going to see all of his best tactics. We could see Tony Parker just guarding Steph Curry the entire game. But the Warriors really need to win this one if they're still going to be a record-setting team. Any other matchups that you're particularly looking forward to?
Spurs second unit versus whatever the Warriors throw out there, because the Warriors have a really nice defensive unit in terms of that, but they have a lot of weaknesses that can be exploited, and I think that the Spurs second unit is very well positioned. And as vanilla as these teams might be, that is just a general dynamic that I think we can learn if they keep their rotations close to normal.
Yeah, at the game we were at against Indiana on Friday, Steph, again, whenever he was out of the game, the Warriors just did not look good. The Spurs probably have the most cohesive bench unit in the league. They also will bring back their starters pretty early on in the second quarter a lot of times and get a couple minutes of them matched up against backups. That could be another problem for the Warriors. I am looking forward to, on the Warriors' defensive end, and I actually have a little bit of a feeling that that is where the series is going to be won or lost. Like, can San Antonio score efficiently against the Warriors? I want to see if Harrison Barnes can guard Kawhi trying to post up, and then if it's Andre, if he can guard him. And then I also want to see Draymond against LaMarcus Aldridge. That's always a fascinating matchup.
And possibly a little bit of Barnes on Aldridge, which I'm really interested in too.
Yeah, although we probably won't see that in this game because it's hard to imagine. I think most of the time Aldridge is going to be out there. He's going to be playing center.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I just want to see
maybe
it.
Maybe we won't. Yeah, I agree too. I don't think that would go particularly well for the Warriors, frankly, but I think Green has always defended him pretty well. And then also just seeing whether Pop goes with the real matchups with Danny Green on Steph and Kawhi on Clay or not right away. And then whether we see Kawhi on Steph also will be absolutely fascinating to watch. And we will be back tomorrow night then, one of our few post-Warriors game podcasts, because this is just going to be an awesome game. I mean, this is really probably the biggest NBA regular season game since January 9th, 1972. Do you know what happened on that day?
That was Lakers-Bucks, I assume.
Yeah, the Bucks, having won 66 games the previous year, they finally stopped the Lakers' 33-game win streak, and that Bucks team was still a top 5-point differential all time, even though they lost in the West Finals to the Lakers, and then that Lakers team obviously went 69-13 and set the all-time wins record at that time and had their 33-game win streak snapped in Milwaukee that game. But, the only other game that I can think of from a regular season standpoint that I was looking forward to as much as this one was the game when the Bulls snapped the Heat 27-game winning streak.
Yeah, that was awesome. I remember that game.
And actually, Hawks-Warriors Volume 1 last year was pretty awesome, too. Also on NBA TV, I'm sorry, it wasn't even on NBA TV.
No, that was League Pass.
League Pass, because they had some other terrible game on ESPN. It was a Friday night. This one at least will be on NBA TV. This will probably be the greatest ratings in the history of NBA TV, you have to imagine.
I would hope so.
All right. Let's talk later. We will be back tomorrow night. Thanks so much for listening. Follow me on Twitter, Nate Duncan NBA. I will be live tweeting the game tomorrow, as will Danny at Danny LaRue. And then also supporting the podcast via an iTunes rating or review is helpful. Or go use that Capspace code on Loot Crate and sign up for some awesome gear as well. They're a new sponsor, so if you want to do that, that would definitely be helpful. And convince them to stay on via the great Dunked On community here. We will talk to you all next time.